ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Journey into Comics. You just heard a little bit of MC Lars's Dragon Blood off of his Zombie Dinosaur LP that just came out this past year. You'll be hearing the rest of that song, and actually the song in its entirety at the end of the show. I wanted to make sure to get that out of the way first. Today, I'm your host, Nate, first of all. Joining me, Brando. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm you know, a so-so here, but doing all right.
Today, we kind of have one topic on the mind, and...
Yes, me and you have sort of thrown around the idea of doing a single episode dedicated to this topic.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like we would be fools to not cover it right after it came out with how big and amazing the episode was, but we're obviously talking about Game of Thrones. And today we brought a couple Thrones experts with us, I would say. Is that something you would agree upon?
Well, I certainly hope so.
Okay, well, let's see. First joining us, welcome back, Blaine. How are you?
I am most excellent, as always.
That's good. I think that's always your answer. Like, hey, what's up, Blaine?
Yeah, usually. It's a pretty common feeling for me.
As long as you are doing most excellent, that's good. Also joining us today, I feel like it's the Subaru 3 plus me, because today joining us, Mike Norris, welcome back to the show yet again, my friend.
Oh, hi, Ro.
You're becoming like an all-time regular. You were just on last week's E3 review.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys did great. That was an excellent episode. You covered everything. Let me just say, and I hate to say this, but the fractured butthole looks amazing.
Yes, it does. that is,
I love how everybody has to say it with some kind of inflection, as to not like not the fractured butthole, but
exactly.
Like, you got to say it, the fractured butthole.
Yeah,
I still stand by that. That is my game of E3. I mean, even with as awesome as that Zelda, you know, gameplay was, with as awesome as the you know God of War stuff was, and some other stuff that they you know that was shown. Honestly, that is the game I'm looking forward to most for this year, is the Fractured Butthole.
Well, getting away from the games, let's talk about what we're here to actually discuss today, because I will say that this is the first year I've actually watched episode to episode with Game of Thrones.
You hated it, didn't you?
No, I actually loved it. I felt very satisfied at the end of every episode, and I felt the need to actually watch it a second time. Most of the time.
What I'm saying is that, like, you just wanted to move on.
No, actually, I really didn't. I enjoyed having to have some suspense built. When there is no suspense, when you blow through that series, it's so dense. You know, the only suspense is from the day to day between when you watch it and when you've watched it last.
Well, I guarantee you that you miss stuff, too, because you were watching it so quickly.
Exactly.
When you go back and you, especially once you've watched the series, if you start from episode one and go back through, you'll catch certain things. Nothing, hardly anything, okay? I shouldn't say nothing, but hardly anything is ever said in this series without some sort of meaning. Like, this world is a dense populated world with history. So when they say something, that's because it is their history. It's basically a throwaway line to them. But it really isn't for lore, you know what I mean? Because that's how we learn about it. Because to them, it's like, oh yeah, that you know that war that we fought, yeah, that was cool.
But it's like, hey, fucking pay attention to this, because this is how you're going to learn about it.
Exactly. I mean, it's sort of weird and kind of quasi Tarantino-esque, how like he kind of fills his world with little conversations bit. That's kind of how it's done. But it's more true to life in a way, because we don't have big exposition about like the life and grand times of Abraham Lincoln. We just all, you know, as we grow up and learn, we learn who the hell he was, and we just know, oh yeah, you know, we'll drop a Lincoln for like reference, and everyone will, you know, sort of get it.
Yeah, we're hanging out in that Ford Theater. Oops, is that still too soon? I don't know. Anyways, so I will say that, yeah, I did enjoy a little bit of the suspense for these episodes. They were really, I mean, this season, one thing I will say is they didn't pussyfoot around. They went for it every episode.
They pretty much have to at this point, because the one thing that I think makes this series stand apart from like something like, for example, Walking Dead, which is a great series in itself, but Walking Dead doesn't have an end. It doesn't have a designated end. Game of Thrones does. And so the story was designed to end at a certain point, just like Breaking Bad. even though that's, you know, that could have gone maybe another season, they always had a certain sort of ending in mind and they just needed to get there. That serves it because, you know, they get to a point and they go, well, we really need to start developing in the end game. So for this season, events seem to go much faster. Things seem to flow a little bit more. Travel time took less. Before it'd be like, well, it took 6 episodes for them to travel from Winterfell to here. Now it's like, you know what? Next episode, we're just going to skip all that crap. She's there.
Yeah. And that's something we can definitely discuss is the speed with which people traveled in this finale.
You know what? Maybe they just explored it already and they just fast traveled.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. That's the way to do
it. Yeah.
To me, I want everybody to chime in on their opinions of this. To me, this episode, the season finale of season 6, was hands down the best episode they've ever had in Game of Thrones, I thought. It brought it every single second, and it left me going, no fucking way, no fucking way. I think I said no fucking way maybe 47 times. In the episode. Blaine, what about you? Did you feel this episode was just like the best they've done?
Oh man. Every episode has just been so top notch. It's really hard to say that. I would say it's definitely in my top 5, but best? No. I really enjoyed Battle of the Bastards a lot.
Such a great episode. I mean, that too, again, another phenomenal episode. We could sit here all day bitching about Rickon. Why don't you zigzag though? I mean, it's like easiest maneuver.
He's a kid who's all he's ever known in his life is just, you know, being on the run. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know that zigzagging might be better. Growing up, he never even shot a damn bow and arrow. He doesn't even know how that works. I mean, it is what it is. Okay. I defended his death.
Okay, that's fair.
A lot.
That's fine. That's fine.
More so, than needed.
Mike, what about you? Is this episode not Battle of the Bastards, which we could sit a whole other episode on?
Winds of Winter.
The Winds of Winter. Do you consider that to be like the best episode in Game of Thrones?
It's not. I wouldn't say it's the best episode for me. But I will say that it's definitely the best finale. It has definitely brought together
by far
the entire story. Like now you have the wide scope of like everything is finally coming together. So as putting the story together, best episode ever, period. But best episode just in an episode? No.
I'm going to take it, Brando. You felt probably the same?
Pretty similar. I honestly, for Game of Thrones, I always sort of consider the last 2 episodes to be the finale.
Yeah.
9 and 10, so...
True.
Will I say, like, combined, were they the best? Yes. Individually, I want to say I can honestly say that this is probably the best episode 9 that they've done. The Battle of the Bastards was really well done. That the scope of what they were able to manage on this show... It's the best battle scene that they've ever done for the show.
And the
it's
fact the that it was, one. There were so many practical stunts in that.
Uh-huh.
That's the part that's mind-blowing. They really had choreographed most of that fight and then CG'd the grand scope of things because, you know, you don't have thousands of extras you bring on set.
to pile into
yeah, into piles. To just put into piles. Hey, can you survive the weight of 400 other people on top of you? I hope so. We'll give you a $100 check at the end.
Did you happen to check out that Ned Stark cameo in the battle?
I'm really as much as I like that, I really like the Peter Dinklage one.
Oh yeah, Scooter Dinklage.
Yes, Scooter Dinklage. I love it. what I will say, I will agree with Mike in saying that this is the best finale they've ever done. As leading back to what I said before. The idea of this season is that they really need to start positioning their chess pieces into play for like in the end game. And this episode did that. It really told you who's where, who's with who, who's aligned with who has what, and where it's going to stand for the next season. The other ones really don't do that so much. A little here, a little there, but they don't really almost every single story this season, and this episode got wrapped or got put into where they're going to be in the next one. The only one that they didn't touch on was the Hound.
Yeah.
His was only added in like kind of like late thing and kind of a late season kind of a side story.
That was like 7 and 8, right? Episode 7 and 8 was the Return of the Hound.
I think so, yeah. And really, it's like maybe there wasn't too much to add there for now. But everybody, I mean, even Sam's side story, he got where he was going. You know, they touched on everybody's story that they tried to.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's, I don't know about you guys, but I think we should just break it down and get into the fat of this. First and foremost, we start with, you know, the trial of Cersei and Ser Loras, and you're in the High Septon, and everything is on edge, and the score, I will just say that score was so...
That was a really cool opening sequence.
It was so different. It set me on edge, because you weren't sure exactly what was going to happen. And the way it plays out so slowly and very methodically, and you see things come into play, and you go, oh, I'm putting the picture together of what the plan now is for Cersei to find her way out of this situation. But man, there were some massive repercussions from just the first 15 minutes of the episode.
Oh, yeah. They really started it off with a blast.
Oh, lovely pun, Brando. God damn. Like, wow.
Your humor is so wild.
Oh, hey. That was a deeper cut, but...
Oh, I got you. That joke was on fire.
Yeah.
If I could go
that far. I'm leaving the puns out. I'm not going there.
Ah, damn it. Okay, so Cersei kind of has this plan, and she uses the, what are they called? The lost children, the little birds,
right? Yeah, the little birds.
Varys' little birds that he sold to now the Hand of the Queen.
But no, not the Hand. He is now the new Grand Maester.
Yes, my fault.
Because, yeah, they are now with him, and we saw that in another episode, didn't we? I could have swore we saw that earlier on in the season when they mentioned them. But
I didn't think they mentioned that they were flipping on him.
Well, they showed it. They showed them getting treats from that maester.
Yeah.
Daenerys Palin.
Okay. So that is our safety word. So Nate needs to kind of go away and handle some business. He has some. We had some unexpected visitors be playing the podcast, and we have a little surprise guest over there. So he's going to go handle that. But so we had the little birds who are they've apparently flipped. Of course, Varys has been gone for now a couple seasons now, and he's been across the seas over in Meereen with our good friend Tyrion. But these little birds, you sort of see them sort of like flocking around. Wow, I actually didn't mean that.
Wow.
I didn't mean that pun. So they're sort of like scooting around, and then they one of them whispers something into Grandmaster Pycelle's ear, sort of leads him on a little bit of a cookie trail hunt to find the king. Is that what he was looking for? He was looking for King Tommen?
Yeah.
And of course... He's like, "Where are you, Your Grace?" And then he's like, and the other master's like, "I'm sorry, Grand Master Pycelle. I mean you no harm." And then you have like these little children come out like from Silent Hill, and they all got these little dagger knives. And I'm just like, "Oh God, dude!" I was having bad flashbacks to PS1 Silent Hill. I'm like, "Oh God, they're gonna stab him in the knee. Oh God, oh God." And well, they did stab him multiple times.
You got Jon Snowed.
Pretty much. I mean, he
definitely.
For the watch.
You know, Ed. You know, I mean, Ed. Two little birds.
No kidding. No kidding.
Nah. But so now he's dead, and so we know that he has been a spy for Cersei pretty much the entire series. So that tells you something right there that her allegiance has shifted to. I can't remember the maester's name that she's been with who revived the mountain.
I can't either.
It's spelled really weird. I'm looking.
Anyway, so Cersei's allegiance has sort of, you know, gone to this new maester. Something is afoot here. Down at the High Septon, we have the actual trial of Ser Loras. And so they bring him in, and, you know, there was a few episodes ago where, you know, he was, you know, of course, he's been held prisoner pretty much the whole season. And a lot of last season as well for his crimes of, you know, laying with other men, and he's dirty and foul and is harmful to everything sacred that this you know, religious group believes in, I guess. So his imprisonment broke him, which is interesting because he was always so arrogant.
Yes.
You know, very flamboyant. What was he called? The Rose Knight?
Yes.
Flower Knight?
Something like that. The Knight of Roses or something like that.
Knight of Roses. And of course, I mean, the Tyrells' sigil is a flower. And their places, and their... I almost called it their home base. But
Highgarden?
Highgarden, yeah. Their domicile is Highgarden. Checkers does not know what that word means. Yes, that is a big, big inside joke that none of our listeners are ever going to get, unless he randomly listens to this episode. But we see Ser Loras on trial, and he's been completely broken. And I really wasn't sure exactly what they were going to do to him at first. And then I'm like, wait, they're going to like carve that thing into his head, that little symbol of the seven, if you will. And my wife actually thought that was a brand, not an actual carving. So when they grabbed him and started cutting, and she was like, oh my God, oh my God. And then, see, here's the thing is that when he confessed to Margaery that he wanted to be done, he didn't care what he has to do, he just wants it to be over. And then shortly right after that, she has been like, she reverted and she's like, oh, yes, praise the Septon, you know, praise the Seven. I was like, is she playing them?
She had a plan. That's why she said you wasn't supposed to mutilate him.
Right. And then she warned her mother to get out of town and go back to Highgarden. She was like, get the hell out of here. You need to go. Shit's about to hit the fan.
I have a feeling she was trying to play Cersei into dying. Basically, you know, the Septon obviously is going to convict her of her crimes. His punishment is death, blah, 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 blah. I think that once that happened, she was going to have Tommen turn and basically give up the faith or the High Sparrow.
Using the death of his mother as a how could you?
Yep.
That's a pretty decent theory there, because we never got to see that.
Yeah, well, her plan got fucked.
It
went up in fire.
It really blew up in her face.
God damn it. Yes.
So those Cersei's not showing up to her trial, and you know, Margaery's pretty like, oh, wait a minute. No, this isn't a part of my, and Mike, I really like your idea here, because the way she reacted, it was like, no, we're getting screwed here.
So, she knew.
And Tommen wasn't there either, because he was like, okay, I'm going to go to the down and for the trials, and there was the mountain, like, pretty much shoving him.
He's like, nah, bro. Nah.
He was, you know what that reminded me of? I know, Blaine, you never did, but Mike, Final Fantasy X, when you're Tidus and you're trying to go talk to Yuna and Kimari, or no, you keep trying to go where Yuna's praying to the faith.
Right.
And Kimari is keeping vigil at the door. He just pushes you back with one arm. No. 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 He doesn't say anything. He just hits. No, he pushes you back. That's exactly what it reminded me of. I'm like, oh, crap, dude. So the idea that Tommen is being pretty much held captive in his own room, he can't go. Cersei's not leaving either. It's like she's setting something up. And then you see what the High Sparrow sends Cersei's cousin. What was his name? You remember his name?
I can never remember his name.
Insignificant character. Continue.
Well, Cersei screwed him instead of Jaime.
Yeah.
And then he repented his sins for incest, and that's how he got into the faith, and that's how he pretty much kind of brought Cersei under fire. Now, so he went off, and he was going to go get Cersei and bring her down for the trial, but he sort of got sidetracked by some of these little birds.
Lancel,
there it is. Yes. He was Robert Baratheon's squire.
Yes.
He was there when Robert got attacked by the boar. Anyway, he chased one down into the cockles of King's Landing. I love that word, don't you?
Yes, it's a bizarre word.
Nate gets it. Inside joke there too. Anyway, so he goes down below, and of course we've seen this before. This is where they underneath the Sept is where they keep the old Targaryens' cache of wildfire, and
it's been mentioned many times throughout the series.
It's been mentioned. It's been shown before, and wasn't it just brought back up? Was it brought back up in this episode, or was it like in the little, like previously on Game of Thrones?
I'm pretty sure, wasn't it the previous episode? Wasn't at some point Tyrion talking to Daenerys about it?
About her father was willing to burn the entire city to stop his father's forces from invading. Yes. Yeah, good point there, Nate. So that's pretty fresh in your mind coming into this episode that they have a cache of wildfire. And he's looking for this little bird, and then he gets Caesar right in the back. It kind of looked like it got him like right in the kidney.
Oh yeah, it was not a death wound, but enough to slow him as slow as he did. Will I say that the timing was a little bit too perfect? Yes. But overall, that was still a totally kick-ass scene.
Yes.
Him crawling on his hands and knees, just trying to see what the hell's going on.
Yeah, because you see these candles lit in the distance, and they're these big drums, these big wooden, almost look like
whiskey bats. Barrels?
Whiskey barrels, yes. And then I love how that scene kept jumping back and forth. So it's really building tension early on in the episode, which is uncharacteristic for the show. Normally they like a slow burn, for tension. They like to tell their stories, but this was right off the bat. And then, of course, Margaery says something's wrong. The High Septon's like, no, or the High Sparrow, I'm sorry, says, no, we must stay. You know, we're going to put her on trial even if she's not here. And then finally they all try to leave, but then they get blocked.
Marjorie's thing is, she understands the consequences of not being here, and she doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. She's doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Marjorie knows enough about what Cersei's capable of to take this as a heat of warning. It's like, we need to leave now.
Now, do you think when Cersei puts this plan into place, after everything she does, and after how things go down, was she prepared for the consequences of her actions after she had escaped one fate with the High Sparrow and the judgment upon her?
Yes.
I mean, you guys are... I mean, obviously, folks, let's just get into it. We're talking spoilers. We're going to be, really cutting this up. So,
spoiler warning.
The wildfire, it eventually, it catches fire and explodes all of that wildfire. And it brings the High Sparrow's cathedral down in the Sept. And
now, that place is of very high significance in King's Landing. That is where all the Targaryens are, all their bodies are buried and kept. That is where, Robert wasn't there, but Joffrey is there. Tywin is there.
I thought Robert was buried there.
They mentioned that Robert wanted to be buried back home.
Oh.
The daughter is there too, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I can never think of her name. It starts with an M.
Marcella.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that, you know, boom, the explosion happens and the deed is done. Now, Tommen has literally just watched the people he believed in, the woman he loved, and everyone he thought he actually still cared about, considering, you know, he had changed the trial by combat rule to essentially send his mother to the stake.
Well, see, Mike had a decent decent theory that he never wanted his mother to die, but he didn't want her to get out of it like that. He wanted her to repent and to, you know, convert to the faith and be by his side, which is interesting, because Mike's theory is that that then Marjorie's plan was to have her get killed by the High Septons, have her be sentenced to death, to then twist Tommen into then getting rid of the, you know, the High Sparrow and that entire sect of that religion,
to then get
rid of Cersei, to be rid of the High Sparrow, because Marjorie's conversion was rather sudden, and it was after meeting with Loras that she converted. And then, you know, since Tommen had already been talking, she used her influence with Tommen, because, you know, he's kind of pussy whipped here, to essentially, like, he's like, all right, you're right, we should do this. And then she knows that she can, like, completely manipulate him. So Tommen has, and you're right about that fact, is that he has seen his entire world crumble.
So does Cersei expect him to just be cool with it, or was she prepared for him to do what he does?
I think that, to be honest, she didn't care, because she felt like the changing the trial by combat was basically him putting her to death. So she felt that he had already turned against her.
Betrayal, yeah.
So she was fully prepared for the consequences.
Well, I disagree a little bit with that. She thought that he would, you know, subsequently, you know, try to, you know, join the creed of assassins. but with what he did, but I don't necessarily think that she wanted that or had thought that he would do that. I think she thought that there would be downfall, that there would be, you know, a lot of, you know, backlash from this, but she would be able to handle it with him. With now that everybody's out, Marjorie's gone, the High Septon's out, you know, the High Sparrow's gone. She now has him back under the wing, and she could try and, like, steer him where she wants him to go. However, that doesn't happen.
No, she didn't leave the mountain. Reaction. She didn't leave the mountain with him.
Right. Yes, you are correct about that. And not that he really would have probably done anything.
He would have stopped him from jumping. Come on now. Is it safe to say that Tommen took a leap of faith into King's Landing?
He did.
Damn it, you beat me to it.
I mean,
I thought he was trying out for the Olympics.
Ooh. See,
I thought that's why they actually, I mean, now the city is actually pretty befitting of its name.
Yeah, I will say, in a little bit of a serious note, in watching that, that was a totally jarring moment in the episode.
It was, but it was silent, but I called it when he walked off screen with his crown, and they didn't follow him. I'm like, oh shit, he's going to kill himself. And then he just went back. But the way that he just so fluidly did it was like, yes!
Yeah. Ugh. You know,
swan dive.
So then what came next in the order of operation after they leave? Obviously, there's implications that we see towards the end of the episode.
We don't really have to follow any sort of, like, continuity here for the episode. We just need to really, like, talk on all the major plot points. And so we can, honestly, I think we can move up to Winterfell and talk about that now.
Oh, God. Okay, let's break down. So, go ahead.
What I want to do first is I want to kind of, you know, let's rewind just a little bit to talk about the Battle of the Bastards. Because I feel like that is one of the greatest battle scenes I've ever done. My favorite moment of that entire episode is when Jon is like that puppy in, like, Los Angeles high speed traffic going everywhere, where he's just like, doesn't know what to do. I love that moment. That was that whole sequence. And it was like around, what was it, like a 4 or 5 minute sequence where there's just chaos all around him.
Oh yeah.
That was freaking amazing.
Him dodging swords and
uh-huh. For, you know, for a quick second, it's like he doesn't know what to do.
Okay, yeah. I want to touch on this real quick since you brought Battle of the Bastards back, and this is going to all tie back in. There was a scene at the end of Battle of the Bastards where we see the fate of Ramsay Bolton. Mm-hmm. And he makes this very, very, and you said it earlier, Brandon, there's no line that is said in this show that is a spared line that doesn't matter. Every line of dialogue is super important for one reason or another. Ramsay tells Sansa, I'm already a part of you now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys see that meaning? Is it the obvious, which A, she's carrying his child?
Well, there's been hints of that. She's even... you know, with her talking to Littlefinger and like a few episodes ago, you know, prior to this, when they meet kind of secretly, before she writes to him,
mm-hmm.
She kind of says that, you know, I still feel him inside me.
Okay, then there's the not so obvious second thing, and this is something that I thought about. Could he also mean the fact that she was willing to sit there and watch him be brutalized? Mm-hmm. As such, and was just okay with it. Like, she was at peace seeing that gruesomeness, and it didn't fuck her up more than she's already been fucked up in this show.
Well, see, her development is really interesting, because at one point, I thought I knew exactly where it was going, and they're seeing to, like, right before they get to the finish line, they're taking a left, and I'm not sure where that's going to leave us. Obviously, all right, so the Knights of the Vale show up and pretty much save the day. The battle was, pretty much lost, with the Bolton's army having John and his crew sort of barricaded between shield and spears and a mountain of bodies. They come in and then they save the day, and then after they retake Winterfell, then all of the lords who pretty much said, no, I'm not going to join you, bastard of Ned Stark, are like, we're sorry. We should have joined you because you won.
Well, fucking little Lyanna Mormont, she's like, fuck y'all.
Yeah.
I think she's quickly become one of my favorite new characters.
You and everybody else.
I mean, she's just fiery. That's what it is about that character. She's just super fucking fiery, and I love it.
Ugh. Just fits Venom. I love it.
I mean, and that, let me tell you, that is such a, the whole, everything that happened in Winterfell. Did you guys notice, by the way, that in the opening credits, they had already changed Winterfell back to the Stark House sigil?
They do that. Whenever there's a changing of the guard on the map, they're pretty quick about changing it. Like, when it was, like, whenever it burned, the next episode on the map, it was in smoke. You know? And so I'm expecting when they go to King's Landing, there's gonna be smoke from where the High Septon had pretty much exploded, and the sigil is gonna have changed
from House Baratheon to House Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a bizarre thing to talk about, and we'll get to that in a minute. But
yeah, so all the lords they've gathered a general assembly of a lot of the high lords and bannermen of from House Stark. A lot of the families from the north, the lords of those families have gathered here to sort of talk. And there's a little bit dissension about, like, you know, well, we can't have these wildlings here, you know, but they're like, shut up. They're here.
Yeah. Like, that didn't last very long right there.
I know. And I really liked that. You know, it's like, dude, they were invited. Shut up.
Can't call them wildlings if they were invited to the table.
No, in fact, I like how John doesn't call them wildlings; he calls them free folk. He has embraced their terminology for what they are.
Well, because he was through the shit with them.
Yeah,
he's been through the shit with the quote unquote wildlings, and I think that's another. That's just a testament to the honor that is Jon Snow.
That is my favorite episode.
Oh, we could, yeah. I wanted to say that before we actually touch on the meeting, there was something else that happens in Winterfell prior to this.
Davos.
Ultra, ultra, ultra important, and that is the the butting of heads between Melisandre, Sir Davos, and then Jon Snow finding out what he finds out. And then, you know, again, John takes the high road. He could just execute her right there. You know, it's proof in the pudding. Sir Davos has been on the side of Jon Snow. You know, he's not going to bullshit him. And Jon Snow could just go, okay, fuck it. Let's take her down. And he says, get out of town, ride south. You know,
if you come back, I'll order your execution.
And then Davos says, I'll do it myself. And I was just like, oh, this is fucking brutal. So she's heading south to who, and where does she end up? Mike, what do you think?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, I can spitball. I think she might swing over to the Iron Isles. Maybe around the time that I believe that Daenerys will land in the Iron Isles. But that's just my theory. I have no idea.
That would be interesting.
Well, you see, I think they might be going to the Iron Islands. They might be going right there. But part of me thinks that she may be going south to Dorne to meet with, I can't remember her name. Something's Sand, right?
Ilaria Sand.
Ilaria Sand. And old Lady Tyrell, who they actually had a meeting during this episode. Because House Lannister has now declared war on Dorne and House Tyrell.
Yep.
and also in a weird way here, you can also consider maybe Cersei killing Loras, Marjorie, their dad, was getting back at old Lady Tyrell. I can't remember her, like Ordell, is that her name? Or
Olenna.
Olenna?
Yes, yeah. Olenna Tyrell.
I tell you what, it is very difficult to remember everybody's freaking name in the show because it's not like a very common name for most of them.
I think I found that the like when there's a big moment with a character that you've had trouble remembering their names, it stays there forever, you know.
Anyway, well, she conspired with Littlefinger and they killed Joffrey.
Yes, they did.
So, in a weird way, that you know, I mean, whether I don't remember if Cersei knows it. I don't know if she does know it, but she definitely got even.
Well, she suspected for the most part that it was Tyrion who had poisoned Joffrey. And that's and then there was also Sansa was one of the suspects. But the Tyrells were briefly, you know, contacted and they were like, "Why would we do? We just got here. Why would we fuck with your shit?" You know?
But she definitely got even and now has declared war. Now, what was it said? Was it like 45,000 troops were pledged to King's Landing from the Tyrells?
And something like that.
Yeah, so then, you know, the old Lady Tyrell, that's just what I'm going to call her. Because she's a badass character, though.
Absolutely.
That's probably my wife's favorite character like in the entire show. She just hasn't. She's a no-bullshit woman. But, you know, she's talking about, you know, why should I partner up with Dorne? And Dorne's like, well, maybe we can offer you not just, you know, survival, but anything you want. And then standing behind her is, of course, Varys.
And now shit has gotten real.
Because he went over to Westeros to find some allies.
Yep.
Which is very unexpected.
Oh, I didn't see
that coming at all.
When you start thinking of, you know, having Daenerys and her Unsullied and her Dothraki and what came to her from the Iron Islands, the Ironborn, that crew joining up with 45,000 men from the Tyrells, the men and women, I should say, from Dorne, that is a hell of a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
And is holy crap if that alliance goes through, because, you know, as Mike said, you know, they might be going right to the Iron Islands and getting Yara that, you know, the Salt Throne. That might happen. That might be episode one where it's just like, bam, slice, dead. here you go.
Euron's done.
Yeah, it's like, yep. Because you know how this show does stuff. They'll make it a big deal, and then one episode, they're like, yeah, we're not fucking with this.
Dead.
Moving on to bigger things.
Yeah, moving on to bigger things. But, of course, there are bigger things because when you're talking about what's going on now, we're swooping back up to Winterfell. What we saw was the meeting of the minds here was pretty much a reenactment of another scene from like season, was it one or two?
Two.
Two.
Yeah.
Or was it or was it the last episode of season one?
It was season two.
Okay. It was the beginning of the first season of season one. Or season two.
Well, yeah. First season of season one.
Shush you.
My favorite. But we saw a reenactment of the King of the North scene, pretty much. Except with some different players at hand. And pretty much what they were saying is, we don't give a crap if Jon Snow is a bastard. You know, he is Ned Stark's blood running through his veins. He's our king. He's the guy that we put our faith in. You know, they know what they know who he is. They know his honor. They know what he's been through. They trust him. They believe him. And because of all of that, even with a little bit of luck and some help from the Vale, Winterfell's recaptured from the Boltons, and the North is once again not oppressed, I guess you could say. If you want to say Boltons were oppressing it, they definitely weren't too healthy for the environment. They were very
well. They led by fear, and the Starks and Jon Snow lead by hope, and that's the key difference.
Honor, and honor. You know that what the Starks have been the pretty much royal family, if you want to say that, in the North for 1,000 years. You know they have been. They're pretty much the first family in the North, and any family. You know, if the Starks are in trouble, they will drop it and go, we're here to help. You know, tell us what we can do. And now all those people who then denied Jon at their doorstep is now saying, we are sorry. We pledge our swords to you, the King of the North.
God, and that was so now, such a sick scene.
Yeah, it was awesome. Especially, it's got to be overwhelming for Jon because in almost every instance, like, there, you know, a part of him wanted to lead, you know, the Night's Watch, right? But then after going with the Free Folk of the Wildlings, it sort of changed his perspective. And then he did lead, and then he made decisions, and then they killed him for it. So at the beginning of this season, he's very reluctant to even fight like the dead. Because now he knows what's waiting for him in the afterlife. And he said, it's nothing. It's no God, no afterlife, no heaven. I saw nothing. And that scared the shit out of him.
Yes.
And I see, and I've predicted, you know, people are like, oh, he's going to take the Iron Throne. It's like, he doesn't want it.
No, he could just, he's going to be a strong-ass alliance in the North.
You know, the thing is that these guys have pretty much put him on a pedestal and said, whether you like it or not, you're our guy. You are our king, damn it. And we trust you. We believe in you. And there's one person that I sort of question whether or not is completely on board with that, and that's Sansa.
Oh, see, I disagree. I thought the person who wasn't completely on board would be Littlefinger.
Well, yeah. I know that for sure, because that goes against what he wants.
Exactly.
Which was detailed, finally. You know, he pretty much... A lot of things this episode were, like, spelled out in plain English for you. Stuff that was alluded to, stuff that was hinted at, stuff that was nudge-nudge, stuff that we could figure out. He said he wants to sit on the Iron Throne, and he wants to marry Sansa.
Never gonna happen.
But if you remember, in the balcony scene with Sansa, she is trying to tell him that he should lead, and he says, no, I am not I'm a bastard, I'm not a trueborn, you are. You should be the woman of Winterfell or whatever.
The Lady of Winterfell. You should be you should be the one that the North rallies around, and they're rallying around him. Right. And see, there's a certain weird little thing going on here, is that in every segment, there's a really powerful woman taking charge. You have Daenerys, who is leading an entire force, you know, from Meereen over to Westeros. You have Cersei, who has pretty much gained control of King's Landing. And then you have, to the south, you have Blaine. What's her name?
Where are we at?
Sand. Dorne.
Oh, Alaria Sand, and then Lady Tyrell.
Oh, well, yeah. You have all these big, powerful women coming into... Oh, and Yara. Yara wants to be queen. So all these different women are vying for these big, powerful roles and alliances. And here you have Jon.
Yeah, but I think Jon can have them rallied behind him and give control to Sansa, and it would be the same thing, because he could be the lead commander of their army. They even need an army. The way this is going, I don't know if it spells it out to you guys, but it seems that before this is all said and done, Jon Snow is going to have an alliance with the queen of Westeros, which is going to be Daenerys. I mean, I don't know if there's anything that really stops her, but we got to just wait and see, I guess. But, you know, especially now that we've been finally given the piece of the puzzle we've all been assuming for a long time of what House Jon Snow actually comes from. And the implications that he is the nephew of Daenerys.
Yeah. So that when I said earlier that almost every single major story arc that appeared in this season sort of gets dealt with, there's this one. We get to see Uncle Benjen and Bran Stark and Meera once again. Pretty much Benjen takes him to just outside the wall, or just inside the wall, for them to be able to pass through, and saying that he can't go, there's magic not allowing dead people to go across, and he goes, and it's pretty like, well, I'm pretty much dead, just not as much of a White Walker. he happens to set them down next to one of those trees, one of the trees of the...
Earwood trees.
Yeah. And so... when Bran touches it, we now go back to the Tower of Joy, which we saw earlier on in the season and we were sort of taken away from. And this is funny because the following scene led to me getting a text, led to me seeing on Facebook about certain theories.
I wonder who the text is from.
The text was from Mike. The vague booking was from Blaine. Yeah.
Talking about that theory of gravity, you know?
Yeah. Which nobody jumped on. Nobody jumped on that.
I don't know what? It.
Theory, inside joke theory?
Damn. Yeah.
I don't know.
Inside joke theory has been proven. Anyway, so...
and is a law.
Yeah. So what we have been pretty much... given to us on a silver platter is R plus L equals J.
Mm-hmm.
It spelled out for us. It went pretty much exactly the way I thought it was going to go, the way that I envisioned it, with Ned rushing up to the tower, to the bedroom to find his sister Lyanna in a bed of blood. Her sort of like kind of clinging on to life. Can't believe that he's there. He's there to save her. But she's not the one that needs saving at this point.
Well, I mean, me and you talked about this before.
I've talked about it with multiple people before.
We talked about how it says, you know, that Jon Snow is Ned's bastard, but he goes back and says, I have never done anything to hurt my wife. And it's very specific. Like, it's I have never done anything. And it's like, well, what about Jon? I never have done anything.
Pretty much, you know.
Spelling it out for you.
Yeah, okay, so he accepts this baby that Lyanna has given birth to. She pretty much begs him to keep him safe, keep him hidden from Robert. Because if he finds out, he'll kill him. I know he will. It's what she said. You know, please keep him safe. And he's sitting there holding this baby with tears rolling down his face. Ned is. And it was a very powerful moment because, like, why would Robert kill this child?
Because he would rightfully claim the throne.
Mm-hmm. Because this child is the son of Rhaegar Targaryen. The guy who, as far as we know, abducted Lyanna and then now impregnated her, raped her, which has been told to us in this show. And now has a child with. Now, if he's a bastard to Rhaegar, would that give him, you know, title to the throne? You know, under certain right, maybe things would have to happen, but Robert would still kill him regardless, just for being a Targaryen. But
correction, Starkarian.
Yeah, Starkarian. So that theory has been proven true. Jon is a Starkarian. However, what we do not know yet is because this show has a thing about it where history is not exactly as it's written. You know, the stories passed down are not exactly as they are, you know, built up to be. And we saw that earlier in this flashback, was it the first or second episode? When we saw Ned and his bannermen taking on these two guys. I can't remember exactly what that guy's name is, but he's a badass swordsman. And the legend is Ned struck him down, but he didn't. Ned was pretty much defeated, and Ned's buddy, Howland Reed, killed him from behind. But that legend didn't get told like that. That's what we're told Ned defeated this awesome swordsman. And so with this, with Ned claiming, you know, John to be his bastard, it hides John from everything. That has a big, you know, ricocheting effect throughout the entire series. It affects him and Catelyn's entire marriage, the way Catelyn treats John. You know, because John or Ned's honor is so so high, or, you know, what's the right word I'm looking for? His honor is so deeply embedded within him that...
So pure?
So pure.
Resolute.
Resolute, good word.
I don't have honor, one.
You don't have one, damn it. His honor is so great that he will not tell his wife, even so many years later, you know, the truth that, no, he's not mine. He's Lyanna's, and I'm just protecting him from Robert. Knowing that he could probably trust his wife to keep that secret, right? I mean, would Catelyn go tell Robert, right?
No.
I don't think that she would. But he promised Lyanna not to accept this child, to keep him safe. And he did. He did until he could no longer do so.
Can we talk about Catelyn Stark for a second?
By all means.
Because, see, with Catelyn, here's something that we need to talk about in this episode. It was one very minor scene, but to me it was one of the most important in this episode.
Yeah, I know what you're going for.
We have Walder Frey. He's eating.
Yeah.
Or he's sitting ready to eat, and this server comes and, you know, brings him this big meat pie and is, you know, standing there, and he slaps her on the ass, and, you know, he's being all coy with her.
You're not one of mine, are you?
Exactly, and he's just like...
Oh, God, that's sick.
Oh, you know, and he's asking where everyone is. He's like, where are my sons? Where is everybody? And this girl keeps going, they're here. They're right here. And it took me a minute, and I went, oh, fuck, she's so gross. That's genius. Who is this chick, you know? And I thought maybe Jamie was behind it at first, you know? And then... in a very just beautifully poetic moment, it is revealed that it's actually Arya who has now mastered the many faces and can just do that as best she pleases. And she slices Walder Frey's throat just like Catelyn's throat was sliced.
The one thing I like about that scene is that she just doesn't kill him. She wipes out his entire family.
Oh, yeah. She took her time. She was stoic about it. She took her fucking sweet time. She was quick, but she knew exactly.
Walder only had a couple sons, right?
Two, right?
Two, yeah.
And those are the ones who were stabbing, like she witnessed them killing some of Rob's men.
Exactly.
Right.
Rob's wife.
Rob's wife, yes.
And child, unborn child.
Ugh, that was a gross red wedding scene. Ugh. So yeah, Arya crosses officially a name off of her list. A name got uncrossed off of her list this year, that she was not expecting. Neither was I. But I can't wait for those two to interact at some point. If the Hound crosses paths with Arya again, how that's going to end up.
When they did the scene with Walder, with Arya dressed up as the little servant girl. And when she said something, they're right here, and then he looks at his food. Whatever she said sounded like in the same sort of accent that Arya has, and I went, oh, shit. Because I remember a certain interview with the actress.
Macy Williams?
Macy, yeah, or Macy. She did, Two Truths and a Lie or Three Truths and a Lie or something like that. And within there, you could sort of deduct that she's going back to Westeros. And then she said something else is that for the trailer of the season, Arya's in it more than you realize because you don't know it's her. And then I was remembering, as soon as it all clicked in my head, I'm like, she now knows the secrets of, the many-faced god, if you will. So now she can bring that to Westeros to use it her own will.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, my wife, she hadn't put it together yet. She didn't put it together until the reveal, until they pulled it off. I was like, oh, shit. And she's like, what? And I just sit there watching because I was like, I knew exactly who it was. And because it was perfect. It was the perfect retribution, the revenge that she wanted. And the thing is that she, when she was watching him die, she just had like this really pleasant smile on her face.
Yeah, she was like, good. Another name's off the list. Cersei's name is on that list.
The Mad Queen?
Yeah, her ass is sitting on the Iron Throne currently.
Crowned queen of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, so the prophecy has nearly been perfectly dead on. Last season, we see a flashback with Cersei, and she was told, her children are going to, wear the gold crown and have gold shrouds and she's going to watch them all die or see them. They're all going to die. And, I can't remember the word. It's Valyrian for little brother is going to, kill her, essentially.
Mm.
Which,
I don't remember that. I remember her saying that the throne will be taken by somebody much younger and prettier than her.
No, hold on. Let me pull this up. Give me 0.3 seconds.
Done.
I was seeing who thought they were quicker, but it was neither of you. Okay. Come on, you fucking thing.
Well, until you get that, I just saw something on IGN that'll make Mike happy.
Do tell.
Final Fantasy VII to get its own Monopoly game.
Yeah.
What?
Does he say what?
Whether you plan to buy houses for the people or build a Mako reactor plant.
Mako reactor plant.
That's amazing. I wish there were pictures. It's going to be released on April 11th next year.
Okay.
Oh, dude. There's plenty enough time to save for it. But everything gets its own Monopoly game, so that's cool.
Seems that way.
Have you found it yet, Nate?
I'm almost there. It's
taking a lot longer than what you thought.
Well, it's a very specifically titled article, and I cannot find the actual titled article. And it's like they removed it. But it was essentially, the article was called Who Will Kill Cersei? You know what? I bet it was on fucking IGN, and it's not even on this.
Can you paraphrase?
I'm going to use Google. No, because I'm trying to pull up the exact quote from last season that was said to Cersei in that flashback, what the exact prophecy was.
Which Lannister brother will kill Cersei, the Queen Cersei on Game of Thrones?
Hold on, I'm pulling up the Cersei prophecy right now.
Meanwhile, the Avatar director is not a huge fan of the Star Wars Force Awakens movie. James Cameron.
I don't like James Cameron.
All right. Said Cersei she wouldn't marry the prince but the king, and while the king would have 20 sons, she would only bear 3 children who will wear golden crowns as well as golden shrouds. Finally, she revealed to Cersei that although she would indeed be queen, she would be cast down by another younger and more beautiful queen.
Mm.
But it goes on to say, here it is, I found it. When your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar shall wrap his hands about your pale white throat and choke the life from you. Hmm. And from that, the Valonqar is Valyrian translated to little brother, which means that either Tyrion or Jaime could possibly do it.
It has to be Tyrion because
Jaime's younger by seconds.
Yeah.
Jamie's younger by seconds, which still means he's younger. It could also be the Hound. He is a younger brother. It doesn't specifically say her little brother. It just says a little brother. And there are still several little brothers. Bran is a little brother, if you want to get technical.
Or is the Kingslayer going to become a Queenslayer?
And see, that's what I'm wondering. He, the look that Jamie has on his face when he sees Cersei take the Iron Throne is disapproval and sadness that she would sacrifice their son. Because like you guys said, the end game, she knew what was coming. She knew she was taking everything away from Tommen. And she, in her own mind, knew he had betrayed her and was sending her to die. Even though that might have not actually been the end game, if that would have played out differently, Cersei could take no chances. So I think Jaime's to the point now where the things that they created to keep their bloodline pure are gone. And now there's no reason to continue on being who they are, you know?
Daenerys Palin.
I like that. So I was going to say also, speaking on, where was I? There was something in the episode that was really important I wanted to make sure we touched on. Why can't I not? Oh, okay. You guys saw how many different flag sigils were in the fleet of Daenerys' ships?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you had the Tyrells, the Martells, the whatever.
The Ironborn.
There was not the Martells, but obviously the Targaryens. By the way, those ships with the golden dragons on the front look fucking amazing. I was just like, mind blown. There was another point I had, and I can't put it together. And that is unfortunate. But anyways, what did you guys think of the episode?
Well...
I don't know. I trailed off because I lost what I was trying to say. So I had to just kind of throw a lob ball. But is there anything that I've missed that we should cover? Let me say that.
Honestly, not really. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where the next season goes because of the alliances that are getting built. One of my, you know, again, I saw the meme. It's like, it was, you know, it was Dario. You know,
Daria?
No, not Daria. you know, pretty much Daenerys breaks up with Dario saying, I can't have a lover because they're going to want to, someone's going to want to marry me for, you know, for a truce or for, you know, for an alliance. And the meme says, who are you going to marry? And she says, I don't snow. So, I mean, obviously it's going to be interesting to see if they all band together to go down to King's Landing and take out the Lannisters and then band together to face the army coming down from, you know, Army of the Dead. It's going to be interesting to see how they do that because I don't see Cersei going down without a fight.
I know what we forgot.
What?
There was a fucking huge scene involving Samwell Tarly.
Oh, getting to the Citadel. And
he is at the Citadel.
You would consider that a big scene.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, are you kidding me?
It's a big deal.
First
but,
of all,
listen,
here's my line of thinking. Okay. Why did Jon Snow send Samwell to the Citadel to become a Grand Maester? To learn how to defeat the White Walkers, right?
Exactly.
He has an entire humongous Citadel filled with books that was totally fucking overwhelming. I was like, wow.
He's not going to get done reading those by the time the dead come.
Well, no. Maybe.
I mean, winter's here, bro.
Yeah, winter is here.
It only took 6 seasons, but winter is here. Daenerys is finally on her way to Westeros.
Well, in winter's defense, it was a particularly long summer.
It was. Yeah. But, you know, Sam's going to kind of be like that one Twilight Zone episode where it's like the guy can read, he has all the time in the world now, but then his glasses break. It's not fair. There was time now. last thing that I wanted to talk about is that there was a scene after Daenerys breaks up with Dario that she has a conversation with Tyrion and she names him Hand of the Queen.
Oh, so awesome.
That was a great scene.
Yeah, it was really cool seeing Tyrion, like, the emotion in his face. Fucking Peter Dinklage, man.
Yeah.
He's like, he's just overwhelmed with, like, whoa.
He got me in the feels on that one, I will say. I was like, God damn, this is intense, because, you know, he has never felt worthy, and she gave him purpose, and it's this huge, you know, I think when you meet Tyrion, you think he's a certain kind of person, and you think he's this terrible person, and as we've evolved with him throughout the seasons, he becomes this really great character that you can rally behind, and now he's been given an opportunity to be the hand to the queen the right way and be respected and revered, not looked at as a disgrace to the family.
Well, see, that's what was so awesome about the ending scene of the episode with all those ships sailing towards Westeros, was she, you know, there's Daenerys, you know, there she is standing right there on like the deck of that ship, up there by you know, sitting right next to her is Tyrion, and then, you know,
Varys,
and then what's her name? Her translator. Oh,
her translator.
Miss, it's because of the name.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
But then, wasn't Grey Worm there too?
Yeah, obviously.
On one of the ships, yeah.
Was he on one of them?
Yeah, he was on the first ship, I believe.
Okay. Well, because, because Theon, because the scene opened with Theon.
Yeah, you're right.
Looking at the sigil of House Greyjoy.
Yeah. You know, and we'll see what's cool about this is that scene, it really bundles up. You know, things are finally getting real after six seasons of putting the placements here and there. I will say that, you know, for this season, Dany's storyline was very meh for me until like the last part of that episode where she reenacted her rebirth for the Dothraki.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last two episodes, other than that, it was very kind of slow and drotting. It's like, okay, she's going to get the Dothraki, all of them now. It kind of seemed like they were like just going, oh, she needs more men. Let's get these guys to her. Then her sending Ser Jorah away was actually pretty emotional, considering how much shit she's given him for betraying her back in the day.
Right. That was a really cool scene for Dany. Like this, for like the past like three or four seasons, she's been like, I'm Daenerys Targaryen, and I am going to get what I want, because I'm the mother of dragons, the unbirth, breaker of chains, blah, 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 fucking, yeah. And, like, she's just been so snooty about it, and, like, I'm going to get my fucking way, because I'm, and she does, of course. But then there's this moment with Jorah where she's, like, finally just her.
Yeah.
And it's just Daenerys.
Well, because she mentions when she kind of sends Dario away and says, I can't bring you to Westeros with me, even though he's a fucking badass. You know, she needs him in Marine, and he's heartbroken and he's upset by it. You know,
she's cold.
Yeah, she's very cold about it. She remarks to Tyrion that she didn't feel anything.
She just wanted it to be over.
But there's something to say about that, because in the same season we have her being so emotional towards Jorah, and it's almost heartbreaking to her to see the fact that he's now inflicted with grayscale. I almost called it gray skin.
The same thing that the little Baratheon girl had.
Yes.
So we know there's a cure.
There is, yes. But wasn't... who cured her? I can't remember.
Yeah. He just said a random doctor. Like, they said that they were bringing in doctors from around the world, and finally it just stopped spreading. That's all it was then.
Well, anyway... You, we saw that emotional reaction in her, you know, saying you go find the cure, then you come back to me, because I've sent you away twice, you know, you still come back, and you know, that's when Jorah finally declares his love for her and says, you know, I'll follow you to death, basically. And then at the end of it, we see her being really ruthless, and I think there's something to say that she has that Targaryen ruthlessness without being mad about it, about being crazy. Like, she, when need be, she can be pretty ruthless.
Yeah.
But she has a resolve. Mm-hmm. She's very peaceful in knowing every move to make. Even when the slavers came, even when the masters came to Marine.
I loved that scene in Battle of the Bastards.
And she was just like, okay, is that what you think? Sure.
Yeah, and then you see this dragon flying in the background.
And then it's like just like
a little dove.
Oh, your whole fleet's dead. Oh, you're the only ones left. Oh, we're going to only kill one of you. And then Grey Worm took two of them out. It was so awesome. And then, because obviously you just leave one alive to tell everybody what happened here, which is genius.
Okay, on the cure for the grayscale, it says that the children one is curable, but the adult version is much worse. Catch it, and it's basically bye.
A slow death, obviously.
Yeah.
I will say one thing I don't think we touched on real quick was the one remaining person from High Sparrow's council that Cersei now has as a prisoner. That she gifted
Shame.
To the Undead Mountain.
I loved her voice. Like, she's just so happy. She's like, shame.
Shame.
Yeah, and she confesses everything she's done in the show and all the heinous things she's done and that she did them because she liked it, mm-hmm. Which was just so brutal. And then finally we see the mountain take the helmet off for the first time and he's all just, you know, brutalized and undead looking. But yeah, I love this episode. I'm really excited for season 7. We only have to wait like a fucking year. So
I gotta say, this episode, the memes that this episode spawned were just fantastic. I've been spreading them like wildfire.
Hey Blaine, let me ask you on air, who is Tommen's favorite rock band?
Fallout Boy.
Yes. Oh, that one cracked me up. I had to say it.
This has been like 1 week where I'm like, I don't give a fuck about spoilers. Y'all getting the memes.
And that's another thing I'll say. I didn't even get to watch the episode until Monday. And I was on Facebook on and off Sunday evening. And I did not get spoiled once because it seemed like there were too many things you could spoil that no one was really saying shit. Because it was just like everything in the episode was very, very important. There were major character deaths throughout the episode. There were major stones that were put in motion, and we have a big clear picture. Daenerys is on her way to the Iron Islands, most likely, then King's Landing, and shit is on. And you know, will Littlefinger try to bring the, you know, the fight to Jon Snow? There's just, I cannot wait for season 7, and to know that it might be a shortened episode season, like only 7 episodes, is troublesome. They did announce there are only 15 total episodes left of Game of Thrones. So we're nearing the end here, folks. That's like a season and a half that they're probably going to break into 2 seasons.
Yep.
So if that's it, first of all, I want to thank Blaine and Mike both for being on. It's awesome to have you guys here.
Yeah, man.
Your input is always fantastic on the show, and we like you. Brandon, it's always good to chat with you, my friend, in our Journey into Comics episodes. This is what, 105, 104, 103? Number are we on?
It's one of those.
103. I think it is 103.
One of the 12 mentioned.
We're past 100 now. It's like starting all over, and we're just adding.
I'm pretty sure it is 103, because 102 was Game Addicts.
Yeah, it was, which, again, awesome episode. The fractured butthole looks great.
Next week, well, me and Mike are planned to do another episode of Game Addicts Podcast, and we're going to be shooting a special pickups video with the two of us going through some of our video game pickups.
Oh, so that's going to be awesome.
Both of those will be going on YouTube. Of course, the episode will go up on YouTube exclusively. It won't be here. It'll be only on YouTube. That'll be going up next week, and the video will be shortly after when I get it edited.
Alrighty, awesome. Well, make sure to check out Journey into Comics on YouTube. Just search Journey into Comics. You can find us on Instagram at Journey into Comics, JIC Podcast on the Twitters, Facebook, Journey into Comics Podcast. You can also send us an email at Journey into Comics Podcast at gmail.com.
If you made it this far, as of June 29th, 2016, our good friend Todd Black's Kickstarter is still going on for Home.
Yeah, he's nearing the goal already. They're like $400 and something odd dollars away, so they're under $500 left, which means they're like 75%.
Oh, dude, man, this thing is really torn through. And
in 1 week, he almost funded it in a week, which is amazing.
I know. It's great.
I'm very happy. Special shout-out to Gene Hoyle. a good buddy of ours, Zeke Donnelly's friend, Gene, suffered a brain aneurysm yesterday. He is alive. He survived it. With brain aneurysms, they don't really know the effects of what happens until down the road. So Gene is in the long road to recovery, and I just wanted to send hope for a speedy recovery shout out to him from our show. And if that's going to do it, guys, in a minute, you're going to hear this awesome tune by MC Lars. Once again, it's Dragon's Blood, which was written about Daenerys, which I thought was great. But anyways, this is episode 103 of Journey into Comics. I'm Nate.
I'm Brando.
I'm Blaine.
They did it at the same fucking time. Oh, that's Daenerys awesome. Palin. Daenerys Palin. All right, we'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening. I got dragon blood. What you wanna do, son? I got dragon blood. What you wanna do? I got dragon blood. What you wanna do, son? Cause I'm always going hard with my Dothraki crew. Daenerys be the name, and I'm setting hearts aflame when I'm burning down these villages and freeing all the slaves. Wiz Khaleesi, have you bit my dragons? My brother tried to sell me to Khal Drogo, look what happened. A bit hot-headed with that molten golden crown. I stopped the Khalasar, so don't be messing with me now. Look my lover in the eye, winter's coming, so am I. I burned the witch alive, who took my son and husband's lives. But I survived so frisky, now these dragons have my back. Suitors are so frisky, and they always try to mac. Zara, Zo, and Daxos had to lock him in a vault. Mend my way to Slaver's Bay, but it was not my fault. It was karmic retribution, there was no preparing them, and Crassus tried to mess with the wrong Targaryen. I smarted him like Tyrion when I knew how Valyrian. These creatures on my shoulders, well, I think you should be fearing them.
You are now watching the throne.
I got dragon blood, what you wanna do, son? I got dragon blood, what you wanna do? I got dragon blood, what you wanna do, son? Cause I'm always going hard with my Dothraki crew. I got dragon blood, what you wanna do, son? I got dragon blood, what you wanna do? I got dragon blood, what you wanna do, son? Cause I'm always going hard with my Dothraki crew.
Dothraki, unsullied behind me, like I'm Luminati. It's the mother of dragons with my gigantic army. We be marching to Meereen, but no, we didn't come to party. Cause they crucify the slaves and put them on the cross. Sir Jorah, please get lost. I know you think I'm hot. My schedule's kinda busy, got no time for Perrier. White girl politic, and that's Daenerys Palin. From Dorne to the Stormlands, the north and beyond. To the Westerlands and Essos, I'm keeping it strong. From the Crownlands to the Reach, you know I'm getting love. To the Riverlands and back, because I've got that dragon blood. So follow more cool. I thought that you knew this, but dragons aren't people, you know we've been through this. I'm quick to burn a hater, no mercy damager, smacking kings in the face like my name was Cersei Lannister.
Burn, burn, yes you're gonna burn. 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 I got dragon blood, what you wanna do, son? I got dragon blood.